And so, cheerful and swaggering candidate for a buyer of my wiseacrings, having warned you that I'm going to write not as professional writers usually do, but quite otherwise, I advise you to reflect seriously before you embark on reading my further expositions, and only then to undertake it. Otherwise, I'm afraid that your hearing and other perceptive as well as digestive organs may be so thoroughly automatized to the literary language of the intelligentsia prevailing at the present time on Earth, that these writings of mine might affect you very, very cacophonously. And thereby, you might lose, do you know what? Your appetite for your favorite dish, and that special psychic feature of yours, which particularly titillates your vitals on catching sight of your neighbor, the brunette. That my language, or rather the form of my mentation, can produce such an effect, I am, thanks to repeated past experiences, as much convinced with my whole being as a thoroughbred donkey is convinced of the rightness and justice of his obstinacy. Now that I've warned you of what is most important, I'm tranquil about all that will follow. For if any misunderstanding should arise on account of my writings, you alone will be to blame, and my conscience will be as clear as, for instance, ex-Kaiser Wilhelm's. In all probability, you're now thinking that I'm a young man with an auspicious exterior and, as some express it, a suspicious interior, and that, as a novice at writing, I am deliberately trying to be eccentric in the hope of becoming famous, and thereby rich. If you really think so, you are very, very mistaken. First of all, I am not young. I have already lived so much that, as is said, I have not only been through the mill, but through all the grindstones. And second, I am not writing in order to make a career for myself or to plant myself firmly on my own feet by means of this profession, which I must add, in my opinion, provides for those who practice it many openings to become candidates directly for hell, assuming, of course, that such people can, in fact, perfect their being to that extent. Because, knowing nothing whatever themselves, they write all kinds of claptrap, and thus, automatically acquiring authority, they develop one of the chief factors for the weakening of the psyche of people, already sufficiently weakened without this. As regards my personal career, thanks to all forces high and low, if you like, even right and left, I have established it long ago and have long been standing on firm feet, and it may be on very good feet. I am certain, moreover, that their strength will suffice for many more years to the discomfort of all my past, present, and future enemies. Yes, I think I might as well tell you about an idea that has only just arisen in my madcap brain, which is, specially, to request the printer to whom I shall entrust my first book to print this initial chapter of my writings in such a way that anybody can read it without cutting the pages of the book itself, whereupon, on learning that it's not written in the usual manner, that is, for helping to produce in the mind of the reader very smoothly and easily exciting images and lulling reveries, he may, if he wishes, without wasting words with the bookseller, return it and get his money back. Money perhaps earned by the sweat of his brow. And I shall do this without fail, because I have just remembered the story of what happened to a certain Transcaucasian Kurd. story I heard in my early youth, and which in later years, whenever I recalled it in similar cases, aroused in me an enduring and inextinguishable impulse of tenderness. I think it will be very useful for me, as well as for you, if I relate this story in some detail. It will be useful chiefly because I have already decided to make the salt, or as contemporary pure-blooded Jewish businessmen would say, the tzimis of this story, one of the basic principles of that new literary form I intend to use for attaining the aim I have in view in this profession of mine. This Transcaucasian Kurd once set out from his village on some business or other to town. There in the market, he saw in a fruit stall a handsomely arranged display of all kinds of fruit. In this display, he noticed one particular fruit, very beautiful in both color and form, and its appearance so took his fancy, and he so longed to try it, that in spite of having scarcely any money, he decided, come what may, to buy at least one of these gifts of great nature and taste it. Then, with intense eagerness, and a boldness not customary to him, he entered the shop, and pointing with his horny finger at the fruit that had taken his fancy, asked the shopkeeper its price. The shopkeeper replied that a pound of the fruit cost 6 groschen. Finding that the price was not at all high for what in his opinion was such beautiful fruit, our Kurd decided to buy a whole pound. Having finished his business in town, he set off again on foot for home that same day. Walking at sunset over the hills and dales, and willy-nilly perceiving the exterior aspect of those enchanting parts of the bosom of great nature, our common mother, and involuntarily inhaling the pure air, uncontaminated by the usual exhalations of industrial towns, our Kurd quite naturally felt a sudden wish to gratify himself with some ordinary food also. So, sitting down by the side of the road, he took some bread from his provision bag and the fruits that had looked so good to him, and leisurely began to eat. But, horror of horrors, very soon everything inside him began to burn. Yet in spite of this, he kept on eating. And this hapless biped creature of our planet kept on eating, thanks only to that particular human property I mentioned, the principle of which I have decided to use as the basis of the new literary form I have created, and which will serve as a beacon leading me to one of my aims. You will, I am sure, soon grasp the sense and meaning of this, of course, according to the degree of your comprehension. During the reading of any subsequent chapter of my writings, that is, if you take the risk and read further, or perhaps even at the end of this first chapter, you will already smell something. And so just at the moment when our Kurd was overwhelmed by all the unusual sensations aroused within him by this strange repast on the bosom of nature, there came along the same road a fellow villager of his, reputed by those who knew him to be very clever and experienced. And seeing that the whole face of the Kurd was aflame, and that his eyes were streaming with tears, and that in spite of this, as if intent upon fulfillment of his most important duty, he was eating real red peppers, he said to him, "What are you doing, you Jericho jackass? You'll be burned alive. Stop eating that barbarous stuff, so foreign to your nature." But our Kurd replied, "No, for nothing on earth will I stop. Didn't I pay my last 6 groschens for them? Even if my soul depart from my body, I will go on eating." Whereupon our resolute curd, it must of course be assumed that he was such, did not stop, but went on eating the red peppers.